From Bright Umbrella, this is Control ClickCast. We inspect the web for you. Today, we're talking about Flexbox with special guest, Zoe Gillenwater. I'm your host, Leah Alcantara, and I'm joined by my fab co-host,
Emily Lewis.
This episode is brought to you by Craft Commerce, a brand new e-commerce platform for Craft CMS. If you're a web shop that likes to create custom-tailored websites for your clients, you're going to love Craft Commerce. It's extremely flexible, leaving all the product modeling and front-end development up to you. And it's got a simple and intuitive back-end for content managers. To learn more and download a free trial, head over to craftcommerce.com.
If you are a front-end dev, you know the pains of building a flexible layout, especially if you've been working with CSS for a long time and can remember the old days. Today, we're going to talk about how CSS layouts have evolved to give us the flexible layout model, aka Flexbox. Helping us navigate this brave new world is Zoe Gillenwater. Zoe is a senior designer for Booking.com in Amsterdam. She's the author of two books on CSS and visual web design, and last year wrote the chapter on Flexbox for Smashing Magazine's new real-life responsive web design book. Welcome to the show, Zoe.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So Zoe, can you tell our listeners a bit more about yourself?
Sure. So like Emily mentioned, I live in Amsterdam. I am not Dutch. I'm American, but I've lived here about 2 years just for a little European adventure. I have two kids and a husband that are on the adventure with me. So I feel like my kids are way smarter than me. They're bilingual now, and I only speak English. And so that's me.
Amsterdam is one of my favorite cities. I absolutely love. I've been there a number of times. I think it's beautiful, and you don't have to have a car if you're on vacation. You can really walk around the whole city, and it's got great food and great museums. Was it for the job that you went to Amsterdam, or was it the adventure and then you got the job?
It was for the job. I originally saw the job on LinkedIn, and at first I, you know, mentioned it to my husband jokingly, like, oh, wouldn't it be fun to live in Europe? Ha ha ha. Like, nobody really does that. But then looking into it more, looking into the company and everything, it seemed like actually this is a really good sounding job, and it would be kind of a cool opportunity for us and for our kids, and you know, to experience new things. And so so I applied for the jobs, and they are the ones who brought me out here. But yeah, we were looking for kind of a change anyway, so this fit really well.
It's exciting.
Very cool. That's a similar story with my husband and I, because I'm from Canada. And we were ready for our own adventure, but a smaller jump from Canada to the United States.
Yeah.
All right. So before we get into Flexbox, Zoe, I wanted to first chat a bit about the history of CSS layouts. Years ago, you wrote Flexible Web Design and discussed techniques for flexible layouts. Can you describe what flexible layouts were then, like what that meant to us back in the day?
Yeah. Basically, back then, there were kind of three terms for flexible layouts. There was liquid, elastic, and hybrid. And liquid basically just meant that your unit of measurement was percentages. So your layout would adjust with the browser viewport. Elastic was when you used ems as your unit of measurement. So this was before we had rems and viewport units, but you had ems that could allow the layout to adjust to the content size. And then hybrid could be a mixture either of those two types or a fixed layout with a liquid layout. So you might have a fixed width sidebar in pixels and a percentage main content area, which was kind of the trickiest type of layout of all to achieve, and still is pretty tricky actually today.
So how have things evolved to get us to where we are today? Like, how did we move from those liquid elastic hybrid models to the Flexbox? Well, I guess maybe we should describe Flexbox and then describe the evolution. So what is Flexbox? What's a high level summary of it?
It's basically a layout system that gives you a lot more control over alignment and order and proportional sizes of boxes so that the boxes can be more flexible to the space available as well as to the content within them. So unlike a lot of the other layout methods that we've used in CSS in the past, this one was actually designed to be an actual layout system, you know, in CSS directly.
So the techniques we used in the past were just leveraging what CSS could do at the time, but it wasn't necessarily for layout. It was just how we were applying different techniques.
Right. The CSS2 didn't, other than positioning, which turned out to be too rigid to use, you know, for your full page layout. Other than positioning, there wasn't really anything in CSS2 that was designed specifically for layout, either kind of component layout or overall page layout. So now with Flexbox and some other layout models, but with Flexbox, it's an actual system designed to handle the sort of layouts that have become common on the web and that web designers want to be able to accomplish with CSS.
Do you think the mobile design, mobile web movement pushed something like Flexbox faster into the consciousness, the front-end developer consciousness?
Yeah, I definitely think that's the case. I feel like when I first wrote Flexible Web Design in 2008, there was kind of a small group of people who were interested in liquid layouts and flexible layouts at that time, but a lot of people didn't really understand why it even mattered. Everybody was just kind of designing for 1024 by 768, and that was, they were satisfied with that. So having all of these different mobile devices come in with all of these different screen sizes finally convinced people, oh yeah, I do have to design for different sizes and I have to make my websites flexible in some way. And the tools that I have now are not very good at that. So I think that did probably drive the development of Flexbox sooner than it might otherwise have come about.
Do you think that, was Flexbox something that was kind of an experiment and then became part of the specification, or it just became part of the specification and people started experimenting with it?
It's been in development for several years and it's gone through a couple revisions in the specification. So it was something that people have been working on for a long time, but I think there were also a lot of experiments that real designers and developers were doing with it that led to a lot of the changes in it. So the initial version of it wasn't as robust as it needed to be to handle the real world sort of layouts that people wanted to create. And so they made some changes in the spec that solve some of those issues. And so it's a lot more fully featured now to really fit with how people want to use it.
You know, we talked a little bit about just layout in general and mobile layout and the necessity of for that to be flexible. But another use case in a way that occurs to me, I saw Eric Meyer give a brief Flexbox kind of primer a couple years back, and you can like make equal height columns.
Right.
Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely.
Which kind of mind-boggling if you've never, you know, you can't do that, I guess, unless you're using Flexbox or some sort of forced height value or JavaScript to determine height.
Right. It seems like such a simple thing visually, but it's been so hard to accomplish with CSS. So yeah, you can use Flexbox on fixed width layouts still, but you can use it to make equal height columns, or you can use it for vertical centering, or, you know, all of those sort of, good things.
So let's talk a little bit more about sort of the use cases or more generally the benefits of Flexbox.
Okay.
So you mentioned having the ability to like center vertically, and, you know, if you're not basically in a table, you kind of can't center vertically. It's very challenging to do so.
Right. It's super hard to do if you don't know the height of the content that you're dealing with.
And so Flexbox gives us a way to, I mean, what's, if it's not too difficult, can you share like what the syntax sort of looks like, but, you know, verbally?
Yeah. No, actually I can, because it is super simple with Flexbox. So basically you set align items center on a container.
Wow.
Yeah. That's it. You know, so if you have a container, you say, I want this to be display flex and I want it to have align item center. And then the children inside will all be vertically centered with each other. Done. I mean, it's logical. Like, that's how it always should have been. It should have just been a property, mm-hmm. like set vertical centering on or off, you know? So that's mm-hmm, how it is right now with Flexbox, which is awesome.
And, you know, applied to like a mobile experience, what kind of benefits does it bring as opposed to a more traditional approach to establishing the layout of a page?
Well, it's really good for responsive web design because the boxes can change size automatically without you even needing media queries sometimes. So it just is based on when there's enough room for them to switch. They can change layout or resize, and you can even rearrange boxes to some extent with Flexbox, which can also help when you're making a mobile version of the layout. And you might want to have the content in a different order than it might otherwise appear, you know, in its default stacking order in the HTML.
Oh, cool. So it's kind of a way to subvert the source order a bit?
Yeah, it's not super... You can't put anything anywhere like you can with mm-hmm. the grid layout CSS. That gives you kind of complete carte blanche to move stuff wherever you want. With Flexbox, you don't have quite that level of flexibility because you can only move things within the same container. You can only move siblings relative to each other, but you do have some ability to reorder things. You also have to be careful with accessibility, though, when you do that.
Right.
You're only going to be reordering things visually, so the screen reading order and the tabbing order is not going to change. So it's good for doing reordering where you might be tempted to put something in an illogical HTML order just because you need it to make floats work mm-hmm. or something like that. Mm-hmm. So instead, right. you can put things in the logical HTML order and then use Flexbox to move things around a little bit.
Nice.
You know what actually occurs to me, Emily? Would this technique have helped with our particular client that had fixed width ads, but the rest of the layout had to be responsive?
I mean, it's possible. With me having never touched Flexbox, I right. couldn't say.
But conceptually.
Zoe, yeah, I mean, Zoe, have you ever worked in a situation like that using Flexbox where there were elements that had to be fixed widths and heights, but the rest of it had to be responsive or flexible?
Yeah, that's one of the best use cases for Flexbox, I would say, allowing having some fixed width pieces of content or some pieces of content that are driven by the box size is driven by the content width, for instance, like a form label. So the form label you might want to be just as wide as the text inside it needs it to be. And then you might want the input that's beside it to just take up all the space left. And it could be the same with a layout with a fixed width ad. So you have the ad that you say is, you know, 200 pixels wide, and then you want the content beside it to just take whatever space is left. That's a really good use of Flexbox. So it's kind of like, you know, the hybrid layouts that I mentioned before. Flexbox is making that sort of layout much, much easier.
Yeah. You know, this is one of those things I'm like, okay, I've got to get in the code and mess with this, to actually see it working. But yeah, because when you're even just trying to get two things to align, most of the time, both things need some sort of value for their width.
Yeah.
In order to get them to fit within a given container. So it'd be nice for it to just be flexible based on one thing's specified width.
Right. Yeah.
So it sounds really cool. But what are we looking at in terms of support?
Basically, you have everything except for IE9 and earlier versions.
Ooh.
So IE10 supports a prefixed older version of the spec. The properties basically work the same, but they have different names, some of them. Mm-hmm. But yeah, all current browsers support it without prefixes. Even if you go several versions back on most of those, you still get support with prefixed versions. So browser support is actually really good now.
Wow. You know, it just proves how fast things move, because just a couple years ago, it wasn't as supported. So when we're talking about using Flexbox, it's pretty viable then right now for production level sites.
I think so. We use it in little bits and pieces on booking.com. I've used it here and there, yeah, on production level code. And I'm always using it though as progressive enhancement, because we do support back to IE7 at booking.com. So you can add Flexbox as progressive enhancement and still have an acceptable experience for those older browsers that don't support Flexbox.
So how are you doing it? Is it simply a matter of the order of your selectors in your CSS?
For the most part. So Flexbox will override most other layout properties automatically. So if you add first float and then you add Flexbox, the Flexbox will take precedence and it will just be ignored if the browser doesn't understand it. So that makes it really easy to just kind of layer Flexbox on top. There are some things that if you have certain margins that you need to make floating work, but you don't want those margins to apply in the case of the Flexbox version, that's where you need to start selectively feeding styles to only one set of browsers or, you know, do feature detection or whatever is your chosen way of separating out styles for old browsers. But in a lot of cases, you can just add the Flexbox right on top. It just overrides the other layout CSS that you have in place and, you know, gives that new improved layout to the browsers that understand it, which, like I said, is almost all of them.
For browser detection, what do you use?
Well, here at Booking, we have our own custom thing. I have used Modernizer on some personal projects, and I like it a lot. It also was updated. The version 3, I believe, of Modernizer that's out now has some new Flexbox checks, so it can check not just if Flexbox is supported or not, but it can check if the Flex Wrap property is supported or not, as that was something that kind of lagged behind some of the other properties in certain browsers. So yeah, I like Modernizer a lot. You can use the at supports rule in CSS as well, but the issue with that is that it's not supported in IE 10 and possibly 11. I'm not certain about that. So that it wouldn't allow you to feed Flexbox rules to IE 10. So that's why I'm kind of avoiding that for right now and sticking with Modernizer.
You mentioned in the middle of that Flexbox wrap.
Yeah.
Did I hear you right?
Yeah, the Flex Wrap property.
What does that property do?
So that property says whether or not your boxes are allowed to wrap and in what direction they wrap. So they could wrap from bottom to top, for instance. But the default is for all items to stay on the same line, which means row or column, no matter what. So it kind of takes care of that issue of float wrapping that sometimes made float layouts really difficult when you had a float or something after the float dropping down and you didn't understand why it was dropping down and it was because of, you know, one extra pixel somewhere. So with Flexbox, you can say, no, you always have to stay on the same line, or yes, you are allowed to wrap.
Oh, I love that.
It's interesting because Zoe sent us a few links to just read up on Flexbox and resources. One of the awesome ones, I think, is this Flexbox cheat sheet, because it like visually shows you what the CSS would look like, and then like in little icons and illustrations how that will translate in the layout. And that Flex Wrap concept, I'm just looking at that and I'm like, my brain is exploding because there's a wrap reverse concept. And I'm like, what? I've only ever seen for years and years and years, it's always like, okay, the last element goes to the next line as always.
Yes. Yeah.
Forever and ever. And now I'm like, what? There's a different way, you know, if you want that.
Yeah. That's the thing, is it was designed to work like with any sort of language, any writing direction and flow content in any direction, which I think that's one of the reasons why a lot of people are kind of overwhelmed by it at first, is because the names of the properties, you know, it's not like float left. That's really clear. Like something is going to go to the left, you know, but when it's like saying align flex start, you're like, what is flex start? What side is that? But it uses those terms on purpose so that it can be work with any sort of language and any writing direction.
Right.
So seeing it visually, like you were talking about in those diagrams, or just playing with it yourself, like in, you know, your developer tools in your browser, changing the value and seeing immediately how it updates, that's really helpful to make sense.
I like that because I feel like that's a lot more friendly for just general discussion. So it doesn't, you know, like, you know, the concept when we're writing classes, you're not supposed to be so prescriptive. So like, it's not going to be blue or whatever, right? Like you talk about the description. So here it's like, you know, flex start. It doesn't specify like a specific position per se,
right?
Like left or right.
Yeah.
So it's a lot more flexible. What also seems to occur to me is that these types of options allow for better international sites. Mm-hmm. Because I feel like in the Western world, we're always going left to right, up and down.
Yeah.
While, you know, a lot of Asian, Chinese or Japanese characters, it's up and down, right to left.
Yeah. Arabic and Hebrew are right to left.
Right.
And like, yeah, there are a lot of different variations, and that Flexbox, because it has those kind of neutral terms,
right,
it just automatically switches things for you if the website has a different direction, like on the body tag.
Right.
So you don't have to write CSS changing all of your float lefts to float rights. It just right. automatically switches things. So
I'm just curious, Zoe, does this save you time in terms of your front end development? I'm just looking at the examples you shared with us, and I was like, wow, this probably would be a lot faster than me writing, you know, 4 dozen media queries to get things to work differently. Is there a huge learning curve, but then it becomes like faster development, or is it about the same?
I would say there definitely is a learning curve if you're used to making layouts with like floats or inline block or display table cell. But then after that, I think it is faster. It usually results in a lot fewer lines of CSS that you have to write. And like I said, there's a lot of properties that take care of common alignment and spacing things that would have taken like all of these like extra divs and like crazy CSS right. to accomplish. And instead you can just set like one property and one value and be done with it. So it helps a lot with those sorts of things.
Yeah, I like how it seems to allow content blocks to take up the space that they're in, as opposed to, like, I call it the squishy middle. Like, I have different breakpoints that I generally aim around. And then as I'm developing, there's like squishy bits on this page where this needs to fill this much space. And on a different page, it's a little different. And so I have all these media queries for these discrete issues as opposed to the overall site layout.
Yeah.
And I feel like this appears that it would resolve that sort of squishy middle aspect, the sort of things, the media queries that I have to set once I'm looking at a page and kind of resizing it and seeing how it flows. Because when, let's say, a content box, there's not enough space in a given viewport for it, it drops to the next level, but then it becomes the full width of it.
Right.
But without me saying, oh, well, in this situation, it's 50% wide. And then when it goes up to, you know, 960 pixels, then it's 100% wide.
Right.
It just sort of fills the space.
Yeah, absolutely. It's good for making the content kind of wrap more elegantly mm-hmm. between your breakpoints. So you have those breakpoints to kind of optimize, like, here is what I want the layout to look like at this size, because it looks horrible if I don't add a breakpoint here, right? But
right.
then often, you know, getting close to those breakpoints, it might start looking a little bit awkward. So Flexbox can sometimes help, yeah, kind of clean up some of those little awkward areas by making the content, the boxes more responsive to their content.
So this wasn't a question that we sent you in advance. So I'm just curious, is Flexbox like your preferred method now, or do you still use other methods? Do you ever do layouts with a grid layout?
Yeah, I still use other methods because I do have to support back to IE7 at booking.com. If I can accomplish something with display inline block, then I'll just do it that way. I will add Flexbox if there's a benefit to having Flexbox, mm-hmm. but I'm not going to just use it just because it's there. So there's still a lot of validity in using display inline block or table cell, but Flexbox is something that I probably use the majority of the time. So not on every layout thing I write nowadays, but probably more often than not, I do use Flexbox.
And you mentioned earlier an accessibility concern regarding like tabbing order or screen reader order. Are there any other accessibility issues that Flexbox introduces that we should be concerned about?
No, that's pretty much the only issue is how it affects the non-visual order. But like I said, you can use that for good or for evil. So you mm-hmm. could use it as an advantage, or you could, you know, kind of abuse it and make things really crazy in the HTML and then try to fix it with Flexbox. So as long as you're using the Flexbox order property just to do purely decorative reordering, so not changing the meaning of the content by reordering it, then you should be mm-hmm. fine in terms of accessibility.
Yeah, and I feel like things like HTML source order, that's just fundamental. Like, you should be making sure that it is good to start with.
Absolutely.
So you kind of mentioned when you were saying, you know, part of the benefits of Flexbox is you end up writing less CSS. And that leads to me thinking like, oh, are there performance benefits to Flexbox? Or are there performance concerns with Flexbox? Like, what are the pros and cons in terms of like things rendering quickly and working?
I think the performance aspects of Flexbox are something that I would love to see tested a whole lot more. And I think a lot of it is just because it is kind of new and being used in real live production code. So there hasn't been a lot of research done about this. I do think it can have benefits and disadvantages, like you mentioned. So it doesn't have any speed problems in terms of the actual page load time compared to like display table cell. Paul Irish did a test a couple of years ago and found that the, you know, current spec, the current version of Flexbox didn't have any problems there compared to display table cell, and it was much faster than the old version of Flexbox. So that was good. Mm. It can cause issues in that since you don't have to put explicit dimensions on things and you can shift boxes around with it, like I was just talking about, that means that when the browser is loading a page with a bunch of Flexbox boxes on it, it's possible that the users will see content resizing and shifting as new content loads in because the browser doesn't know yet how big to make it. So that's the perceived performance sort of thing, right? So yeah, there's kind of pros and cons. Basically, if you wanted to avoid that perceived performance problem, you could just avoid using Flexbox for your overall page layout and then use it mainly to lay out individual components. I find that works better anyway. It wasn't really designed to be an overall page layout tool. The grid layout module is going to be a lot stronger for that use case. But Flexbox is really good laying out kind of widgets and components and modules inside those major page sections.
So in terms of, like you were describing, I mean, is that kind of like a flash of unstyled content as it's trying to like figure out what it looks like as the page is rendering?
It's kind of similar to that, but it would be that the content
flash of unlaid out content.
Yeah, if you had a whole bunch of Flexbox boxes that none of them have explicit dimensions, then as they come in, then they'll have to resize and move around to make room. And so that might be kind of an awkward user experience.
Would progressive enhancement address that, where you had specified widths and then the layout was triggered in terms of, you know, the order you wrote it in your CSS?
It's possible. I think, yeah, like I said, this would be something that is ripe for experimentation. I'd love to do more there and see what other people find using it again in the real world, seeing how it performs for people. I think we need more information on this and more examples.
Well, speaking of, what's your perception of its use right now? Do you sense that a lot of people are starting to use it, or it's still a ways off from being widely adopted?
I think a lot of people are starting to use it. So I've been speaking about it at conferences for a few years, really. And in the last, I don't know, 6 months when I've spoken about it, lots of people have said that they are already using it. I mean, obviously that's kind of skewed towards the type of people who go to conferences.
Sure.
So I don't think it's, you know, in wide use among just kind of ordinary plugging away at your job sort of web developer person, but among a certain subset of the web world, it definitely is getting use now.
So we talked a little bit about accessibility, a little bit about performance and even progressive enhancement. Are there any things more along those challenge aspects of Flexbox that we should consider?
Well, like anything, there are bugs with certain browsers. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, IE tends to be the main offender here still. So like IE 11 has some Flexbox bugs. There's workarounds for many of them. Phil Walton has a repo on GitHub called Flex Bugs, where he documents a bunch of these. It's not just IE 11. There's bugs with some other browsers as well. But at least since they're starting to be documented now, you can learn maybe some workarounds for them. And, you know, it's a new part of the layout algorithm that browsers are adding. So it makes sense that there's going to be some bugs. But so far, I haven't run into too many problems there.
That's always good to hear.
Yeah,
for sure.
So is Flexbox particularly suited to a particular type of site or even a code base?
Nothing, you know, kind of immediately comes to mind there. I mean, the main thing that comes to mind is just like I said before, it's really good for laying out kind of components, flexible components. So it's good for kind of web appy like sites, if I
right.
could call it that.
Right.
And, you know, good at those sorts of widgets and that sort of thing. It wouldn't be probably as much use for kind of just a small business website where you have just your two columns and you have your big mm-hmm. hero image and that sort of thing. Not that you couldn't use it there, but it just doesn't offer as many benefits in those sort of situations.
You had mentioned that Flexbox wasn't intended to necessarily address the layout of an entire page. Can you expand on that a little bit? Why it's more suitable for kind of the internal components?
Sure. So one thing that makes it not great at the overall page layout is that it is not an actual grid system. So you see people trying to use Flexbox to make grids, and you can do that to some extent, but it wasn't designed to be a grid system. And you'll find that Flexbox will make boxes be proportional to one another within the same line, so row or column. Mm-hmm. But as soon as you get onto the next row or column, it doesn't care what happened in the row or column before. So it's not going to line things up with the other rows or columns. If you're trying to get a very precise grid with Flexbox, you will probably run into trouble there. And the way to work around that with Flexbox is to go back to giving everything explicit percentage widths. But then you're mm-hmm. losing a lot of the point of Flexbox if you're still going to have the same sort of grid CSS that you had before where everything has, you know, like 66.3784%, you know, and those weird things that you do with those sort of grid systems. So that's a big reason why it's not that well suited to overall page layout, unless it's a pretty simple sort of page layout. So if you have kind of the stacked bar sort of layout where you have your big hero image and then you have your bar with your three little, you know, features of your product, and then you have your bar with your testimonials and you want them to all be vertically centered with each other, like you could use Flexbox for that sort of pretty simple page layout, but it's not going to create like perfect grids for you. Does that make sense? I know it's kind of hard to talk about without seeing it.
Yeah. I mean, anytime you talk about code, it's hard because a lot of times you have to visualize it. But,
yeah.
You know, we make a lot of those kind of sites. So I know exactly what you're talking
yeah.
about.
But I think the summary is really like if there's multiple components, you know, Flexbox can probably work better with that type of page or site. And if it's just literally a simple, here's one piece of content and then like one sidebar and one hero, do you really necessarily need to have like everything flow in a mystical, interesting way?
Right. Yeah. I mean, the layout tools we already were using before, you know, handled that sort of simple layout already pretty well. So,
and if I'm hearing you correctly, like, I don't think Flexbox is going to replace what we've done in the past. It's just another option that we can build into our layouts.
That's what I think. I think that's a good way to look at it. And I think that when we finally do have the CSS grid layout module supported in browsers, that Flexbox and grid layout are going to go really well together. So I think someday we're going to be laying out the overall page layout with CSS grid layout. And then within those major sections that the grid creates, then we will use Flexbox to create the components and to lay out individual pieces of content with each other in a, you know, proportional, flexible way.
It's very cool. So when you're actually sitting down to write all this code, do you use something like Sass or any other preprocessor to build it out?
Yeah, Sass is really useful for Flexbox because, as I mentioned, it went through a bunch of changes. And so there's the different browser prefixed versions as well as different names for some of the properties for older browsers. So there's a lot of Sass mixins that help manage all of that, generating the different browser variants for you. So that makes things a lot easier. You can use auto prefixer as well to add all of that stuff. The problem with using auto prefixer with Flexbox, I think, is that you cannot tell it to not put in the 2009 syntax of Flexbox. So that's used by old Safari and old Android. And they supported an old version of Flexbox that's pretty slow to render. And it's also, you know, kind of buggy. It doesn't have flex wrap support. So I don't really like using that version, but auto prefixer is going to add that version no matter what, unless you exclude those browsers from all of your, you know, auto prefixer CSS. That's perfectly valid. But if you want to support those browsers, but just not with Flexbox, you don't have that option. So I like the SAS way of doing it, having the SAS mixins, which kind of control those variants. And SAS also can come in handy when you're trying to add modernizer versions of the CSS. So you can keep your Flexbox and non-Flexbox styles like indented with each other. And so it's easier to see how they're related to each other and have your overrides, you know, together in the same place.
So is there such a thing as basic and then advanced Flexbox, or is it just Flexbox?
You can definitely use Flexbox for really simple stuff. So you could use it to just do equal height columns or vertical centering. So you could still have floating or whatever, you know, to create your columns, but then you add Flexbox just so that they are equal in height. You know, the background color stretches all the way to the bottom. Like, that's it. And that could be just adding two lines of Flexbox CSS on top of your other CSS. So you can definitely use it in a really simple way like that without having to lay out like entire components with it. That would be kind of the more advanced use of Flexbox.
I think that's probably a nice way to get comfortable with it, you know, just using it in small discrete sections of a given site. Like I feel like equal height columns or the vertical centering alone comes up so often in even your basic, you know, quote unquote marketing or brochure style site, that would be a really good way to sort of experiment, see how it fits in, get yourself comfortable with it.
Yeah. And I mean, another use for Flexbox that I love that's really simple is just putting two things on opposite ends of the same line. Which we have so many ways to do that with CSS, and they work okay. But the problem usually comes in when those two items can no longer fit on the same line and one of them has to wrap. That's usually where it gets ugly. And so Flexbox can make that wrapping a lot less ugly. It can make it a lot more smart as to what point that wrapping takes place at, and make it wrap to, like instead of having one wrap down to the right edge, it can wrap to the left edge underneath the other piece of content, so it looks more natural how things stack and wrap. So that's another just really simple use of Flexbox, is just putting, you know, one thing on the left and putting one thing on the right.
And a specific use case of that example is footers, right? Because we all have the on the left-hand side is the copyright and, you know, maybe a copy of the navigation links. But on the right-hand side, we've got our headline plus our social media icons, you know, and currently in the quote old fashioned way, we just have to like be okay with it wrapping and right aligned and float it to the right. And then the other ones float it to the left. But if you want to have your social media icons start where your headline share this post starts, Flexbox makes more sense and makes it easier to do it naturally.
Yeah. Again, in terms of progressive enhancement, you can still have that old CSS in place there, and then you can just add Flexbox on top so that almost everybody, like 95% of your site visitors, will see the more elegant Flexbox version, but it'll still be on the left and right for other browsers most of the time.
What about a more complicated implementation? What's the coolest thing you've seen or built yourself using Flexbox?
Well, one really complicated but cool implementation of Flexbox is the Guardian's website, the newspaper in the UK. So you should definitely go check out their website and look at their CSS. So they are using Flexbox to lay out their story blocks in a responsive way to kind of rearrange the layout from the mobile view to the, you know, wider view. And it's really modular and really cool to see how they can kind of shift content around and make, you know, again, equal height columns and things like that using Flexbox. So that is a really good example of how it's being used like in the real world in a really comprehensive way.
Oh, very cool. I'm looking at it right now, and sometimes we just take those kind of like vertical, everything is so perfectly aligned vertically for granted.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at it, I'm like, oh, so pretty.
Well, that's the thing is with a lot of Flexbox demos, like they don't look that fancy because it's just like, this is how it should be, right? Like everything should be lined up.
Right.
Like that's one of the main benefits of Flexbox. It's not like it's doing anything crazy outrageous. It's just like making stuff lined up like we always wanted it to be, you know, in an easy way, you know, with just a little bit of CSS. But there are some really cool demos with it on like CodePen. There's like a tournament brackets layout that uses Flexbox.
Is this one of those code pens you sent us?
Yes, yeah.
Okay. We'll be sure to post them in our show notes.
Yeah. And then I have a like a responsive menu that like the off canvas menu pattern using Flexbox. Cool. And then it shifts automatically to a top nav bar when the window's wider. So those sort of things are really cool to look at as well.
Oh, that's nice. This is one of the things that's so cool about CodePen. You can really see these examples nicely. So in our, not our last episode, but our first episode of this year, one of our main points of conversation was making smart decisions about what trends to invest our time and energy in.
Yeah.
So where do you think Flexbox should rank for someone like us? We've been working on the web for a really long time.
I definitely think it should rank highly because it has been around for quite a while now. And it's really stable in terms of the syntax now, and it's really well supported. So I think it's going to be used pretty extensively in component layout from now on. And it does make things a lot easier than the old layout hacks. So it will probably be a welcome relief to seasoned web developers and designers.
Well, yeah, just looking at some of these examples, I'm like, oh gosh, this is actually... this will save me time on some of the things that I've tried to do before. Yeah.
Yeah.
What about for like a newbie, someone who's, you know, just getting into the web? Should Flexbox be on their radar?
I think so as well. But, you know, like I said, it's still perfectly valid to use other layout methods. So I would want newer devs to have a good understanding in just like the box model and how that affects layout. I feel like a lot of people don't really understand that. You know, they don't understand how it really works. They just know, okay, if I Google this and I copy and paste this code and I paste it in there, it makes things go to the left and the right. So I think having a real understanding of how the box model works and how like display block versus inline block, how those things work is more important first. But once you understand those things, I think Flexbox is a good thing to add on because it is... it does allow you to do all sorts of different alignment things that you can't do before. And it is so direction neutral, so you can run content any which way. So I think that's really fun to play with when you are, you know, somewhat new to, you know, making web pages.
So if you are a newbie, like if I was a newbie and went up to you and you said, yes, learn the box model, where would you take them to? What resource would you send them so they learn the foundation of the box model before jumping willy-nilly into the Flexbox?
That's a really good question. I like a lot of the stuff on MDN, Mozilla Developer
Network.
So though I don't know if they in particular have like a great like box model or display tutorial, but I feel like they explain things pretty clearly, you know, and give you a good understanding of like what technically is going on without being as dense as the actual spec at the W3 site.
Right. <you know? laughs>
So that I think is a good resource for people who are learning.
And what about for those of us who want to get more familiar with Flexbox? What would be your top resources for that?
Well, one thing would be the Flexbugs site on GitHub that I mentioned before, just because that is, those are things that you might run into. And if you are more experienced, it's good to have that knowledge ahead of time so that you can just avoid some of those issues to begin with and you don't have to even, you know, ever run up against them.
I love that suggestion. I think far too often getting familiar with the bugs is the last thing we end up doing, but it actually makes sense to know what you might be getting into before you get into it.
Yeah. And it's not like there's like 50 bugs on there. I mean, there's literally like 12 bugs or something like that, you know? So you can read it and, you know, click on some of the demo links or whatever in an hour and have a good knowledge of what you're heading into. And then there's a couple really cool visual interactive tools to play with Flexbox. And, you know, you can change the values and see how they move things around. One is this froggy game where you're like moving frogs around onto lily pads and stuff using Flexbox properties. So I think that's a good tool for even, you know, experienced developers. If you haven't used Flexbox yet, it's a good way to get a visual sense of what the weird property names and values translate into in actual layouts.
Yeah, I also like this Flexbox in 5 that you sent us.
Yeah,
totally. It's like a tutorial / demo / interactive kind of thing that I also think, you know, everyone learns a different way. So you got to find the thing that connects most to you. But this one I particularly like because it's informative, but it's also making me be interactive with it so I can see how the different values change. And then I also really love that it spits out code that I can see what it would look like, the syntax and such.
Yeah, absolutely. I really like that one too.
So besides the Guardian website where you're like, this is a really, really cool, complex use of Flexbox, do you have any other cool sites for our visitors to take a look at?
Well, CodePen is always a great resource for seeing demos of things that people are doing with Flexbox and other tools. Since Flexbox is pretty well suited to little component layout, I think it's also pretty well suited to CodePen, you know, so you can see how you would use it in small bits and pieces. There's not really like a, at least that I know of, there's no like Flexbox, you know, dedicated inspiration site. I would like to gather more examples of real sites that are using it. I know like Shopify uses it a little bit. I know Skyscanner, I think, uses it a little bit. So there are some other sites out there other than The Guardian who are using it. But I think it would be great to kind of have them gathered together somewhere. I should really work
like
on that.
Like a gallery or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I imagine it's one of those things you may not just look at a site and say, oh, it's using Flexbox. You'd have to get behind the scenes and see what's happening.
Right, exactly. Yeah, because a lot of times it just looks like existing layouts. It's not till you come to a point where it would have like broken down and looked horrible that like Flexbox like swoops in and saves the day.
So before we wrap up, you know, you mentioned earlier that you wouldn't necessarily recommend Flexbox for, you know, an entire page layout for the external thing, especially grid based. One of our listeners wrote in and specifically said, what should we not use it for? Is there anything that Flexbox is just not a good fit for? Like if you are building a site for IE6, definitely don't use Flexbox. But is there anything else?
Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah, I mean, basically anything where you're trying any kind of rigid grid sort of use. Like you can use Flexbox to create like kind of a grid gallery sort of thing, but it also, it doesn't have, there's no way to control like the last item on a line. Like there's no like last, there's no pseudo element for, you know, controlling that stuff with Flexbox right now. So that also makes grid sort of layouts with Flexbox really tricky. So yeah, it's not really great for that sort of thing. I'm trying to think anything else that I would absolutely not use it for. No, I mean, that's the main thing that comes to mind. Yeah, if you have to have a picture perfect layout in IE 6 and 7, then Flexbox is not going to offer you any advantages there. But yeah, that's,
I feel like that's really refreshing because, you know, like I said earlier, just a couple years ago, the browser support wasn't where it is today. And so I don't think that would have been your same answer. And it's one of the reasons why I at the time I didn't look into Flexbox. I was just like, well, my clients need this kind of support, so I'm not going to be investing in that right now. But you know, from what I'm hearing now, it's to a point where, yeah, it's very viable, you know, with the browser support as broad as it is. And, you know, obviously progressive enhancement for, you know, those, hopefully for our listeners, fewer of the sites you have to account for older versions of IE.
Oh, yeah, I agree. I feel like it just really snowballed in the last year. Like it was kind of going there wasn't a whole lot of momentum on, you know, new browsers taking it up for a while. And then like all of a sudden it seemed like all of them were supporting it. So that's been really great that we can really use it now.
Definitely. This is going on the list, you know, even following our discussion earlier this year, talking about, you know, being picky about what I'm going to invest my time in this. I think this will save me time in the long run. So it's worth me looking into now.
Yeah. And one thing that I'll mention about that too, is if you're going to use it for progressive enhancement, at first it might seem like, well, then how is it saving me any time if I have to make the layout first for IE 7 through 9 and then I have to like make the layout again with Flexbox? Like, how can that help? But basically how I'm using it for progressive enhancement is I'm not really making like a perfect layout first for IE 7 through 9. I'm just giving them like, yeah, display inline or something. So everything's on one line together. Fine. It doesn't stretch full width, or the last item doesn't move to the right side like I want it to, but it's fine. They're all laying out on the same line together. Mm-hmm. And now I'm going to add Flexbox on top to make the middle section stretch to full width and the right thing actually go over to the right edge and all of those sort of layout improvements. And in that sense, it really does save me time not having to create some complicated HTML structure and CSS to accomplish that sort of layout. So you don't, it doesn't have to look exactly the same in the older browsers. You just give them something very basic, lay the foundation, and then just add Flexbox as an enhancement.
Cool.
Very cool. Very cool. I feel like Emily's already starting to code off to the side right now. But before we finish up, we do have our rapid fire 10 questions so our listeners can get to know you a bit better.
All right.
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right. First question. Morning person or night owl?
Morning person.
What's one of your guilty pleasures?
I really like organizing things. It's so nerdy and horrible, but I don't care. I love it.
Oh, you're speaking to the right people. What software could you not live without?
Software. I guess Sublime. I use it all day, every day.
What profession other than your own would you like to try?
Should I say professional organizer, I guess? No.
Well, that would be the best job.
Professional organizer would be pretty good. Or I really like gardening. So I don't know what sort of gardening job you could have. I guess I could work in the tulip fields here in Amsterdam or something. That might be nice.
Cool. What profession would you not like to try?
Dentist.
If you could take us to one restaurant in your town, where would we go?
Well, there's a Dutch restaurant that I think has really good food, and it's all cute and quaint and Dutch and everything. And so I usually like to take visitors there. It's called, but if any Dutch people are listening, they're going to laugh at my horrible pronunciation. Okay, it's called something like Hasha Klaes or something, but I don't know. It's got a lot of vowels. That's all I can tell you.
All right. If you can meet someone famous, living or dead, who would it be?
Jane Austen.
If you could have a superpower, what would it be?
Teleportation.
What is your favorite band or musician?
Stone Temple Pilots. No. Red Hot Chili Peppers.
All right. Last question. Pancakes or waffles?
Waffles.
Ah, you're our first waffle answer.
Really?
Very cool. Yeah.
I'm in the land of pancakes and waffles. So I...
Yeah,
that's
waffles
true.
Too.
Yeah. That is true. Mm-hmm.
Good stuff.
So that's all the time we have for today. Thanks for being on the show, Zoe.
Thank you for having me. This is a lot of fun.
In case our listeners want to follow up with you, where can they find you online?
So my website is zomigi.com. My name is way too long, so I just shortened it to Zomigi. And that's also my Twitter handle if you want to tweet at me.
Awesome. Thanks again, Zoe. This was exactly what I needed to get off my butt and start working with Flexbox.
Good, good. Let me know how it goes.
I will.
Control Click is produced by Bright Umbrella, a web services agency obsessed with happy clients. Today's podcast would not be possible without the support of this episode's sponsor. Thank you, Craft Commerce.
We'd also like to thank our partners, Arcus Tech and Devotee.
And thanks to our listeners for tuning in. If you want to know more about Control Click, make sure you follow us on Twitter at Control Clickcast or visit our website, controlclickcast.com. And if you liked this episode, please give us a review on Stitcher or iTunes or both. And if you really liked this episode, consider donating to the show.
Links are on our site and in our show notes.
Don't forget to tune in to our next episode when we are revisiting an episode from our EE podcast days. Travis Smith is returning to the show to discuss his updated statistics on large expression engine sites. Be sure to check out our schedule on our site, controlclickcast.com/schedule, for more upcoming topics.
This is Leah Alcantara
and Emily Lewis
signing off for Control Clickcast. See you next time.
Cheers.